Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, Black Arts and Culture from the African Sisters Media Network. We are speaking this morning to Michael Warr, not a stranger to the airwaves here. And this Saturday, tomorrow, Saturday, September 14th, he and Louise Rodriguez are going to be in conversation looking at art and healing at the De Young Museum, a free lecture in the Claret Auditorium from 3 to 4:30. Is that correct?
That's right, at the De Young Museum.
Okay. Yeah, it's so exciting. I really enjoyed having you on last when you were talking about your release, Armageddon of Funk, We Are All the Black Boy. And actually, no, that's another publication. and that was really wonderful. And we're going to play something from one of your performances a little later on in the show. But so anyway, it was really great having you on to share your new publication with us. Do you have any new work that we haven't heard about yet? Or are you working on something?
Well, I'm working on the next one, and particularly with so much going on in the country to today, I think it's going to be a very, very different We Are All the Black Boy. It's really largely autobiographical, even though I tend to write in relationship to what's going on around me. This next is going to be more external in what its focus is. Don't have a title yet, though.
right. yeah. You are also co-editor of Power Lines, A Decade of Poetry from Chicago's Guild Complex, all from Tichucha, is that how you pronounce it?
Tia Chucha Press.
And that's a press that Luis Rodriguez, I believe, and his wife founded, right?
Well, Luis founded that, and we actually were living together at the time. It was the publishing wing of the Guild Complex, a literary arts organization that I co-founded. Luis was one of the founders. And he named it after his aunt Chucha, so Tia means aunt in Spanish. And he said she was the crazy aunt in the family that inspired him to be an artist. And that's where the title of the press comes from, Tia Chucha Press.
Right. So that means that it's a small press, independent press, one of the sort of rare and types of presses that we really need to preserve, right? In the age where small presses are being gobbled up.
Definitely. I mean, I think that the background of that press was Luis had gone to all the major presses and tried to get published, and one of the responses he got was that we've already published a Latino poet, and so that was pretty outrageous. So one was enough. So he decided to publish himself, fortunately, instead of censoring himself. And that was the beginning of the press. So he published first Poems Across the Planet. And then the first poets that he published outside of himself were when he simultaneously published Patricia Smith, David Hernandez, and myself. We were the three poets outside of Luis to be published by Tia Press.
Right. Yeah. So you and Luis have a long history of collaboration with one another, going back to 1989 with the founding of this press. And you also have collaborated in the integration of arts and social change for more than 20 years as well. You mentioned already the creation of the Guild Literary Complex in Chicago, for which you were the founding director. And Louise, I'm reading from the press release for this event, drew on that experience in founding Tia Chucha's Central Cultural and Bookstore based in Salomar, California. So Louise is going to talk about Rushing Water, Rising Dreams, his latest project, and also film. And you're going to recite from your book tomorrow. And I'm wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about, or a lot about, the intersection of art and healing. I just think that's a wonderful topic, particularly, you know, at a time when, you know, 9/11 anniversary just passed 2 days ago, and the day before that, we had rumors of war, and it's, you know, and it's still a rumor, and it still might happen in Syria with what the president shared with us about his reasons. And I told my students, I was like, I am so not convinced that we need to, you know, bomb these people to teach them a lesson about, weapons they're using.
Oh, the chemical weapons, right.
Chemical weapons, and
The latest version of go to war for weapons of mass destruction. You know, when does violence really resolve anything? And the people who wind sacrificing the families and losing their children, you know, it's the people who are generally from the working class. And, you know, to have men at the top, making these decisions about other people's lives for something that's just not going to work, that the tendency is going to be to escalate the crises that they're trying to resolve. You know, I think creativity, finding other ways to resolve crises, is that these leaders need to be looking at different ways to get at the resolution of these problems. And the whole issue of healing, you know, you can see it in the global environment, but you can also see it on the neighborhood environment. And I think a lot of the work that we've done, both through THH Press, through the Central that Luis and Trini have built in Los Angeles, and the Guild Complex in Chicago, was all really based in how you can use ideas and how you can use creativity to work at resolving issues that take place on the local as well as the national level. And so this is collaborations that are based in working with other organizations, but also rooted in building community.
Right. Yeah, certainly. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit and then maybe share a poem. I'm currently uploading Hallucinating. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the role of art in your life. And a lot of times, sometimes people say how art saves them. And I think when one is familiar with Luis Rodriguez's work, particularly always running, you know, gang days in L.A., and his latest memoir, as an older person looking back, you know, it calls you back. You know, one can see, like, oh, yeah, art really, particularly writing, really saved him. Well, you could talk a little bit about the role of art in your life and where you come from and where you were raised and, sort of, you know, your writing life, because you are certainly a veteran.
Well, you know, I grew up here in San Francisco. My earliest memories are of Hunters Point. And Hunters Point, one of those areas really kind of today associated, you know, predominantly African American when I was growing up. And the even in those days, the whole issue of kind of gang violence and being feared to be out on the street, it was nothing like it is today, but it was an issue. And I know that for me, that I was painting, drawing, and writing at a very, very early age, and I was very much influenced by artists around me at the time. The Last Poets were on the radio when I was a kid, and that had a profound influence on me. It gave me a way of looking at the world and expressing my own concerns and joys and the things that were important to me. through art and to address the issues of the day, because that's what the adult poets were doing around me. You know, the Black Panthers were passing literature outside of my high school. It's today I've had the good fortune of meeting Emery Douglas, who did so many of those covers. But that art on those papers, on those newspapers, had an impact on me even then. Another thing, however, is that art and culture is a way of learning. And so I went to a school that at the time had the lowest reading rate in the entire state of California. But the fact that I was reading these poets, I stole a book called 3,000 Years of Black Poetry when I was a kid. And reading these poets from all over the world had such a profound influence on me that it a lot of my education actually came through the arts, and not so much from the formal school structure at the time. And so I have always found that arts is a way of lifting you up and, you know, giving you a way to impact the world around you.
Wow, that's amazing that you were attending the school that had the lowest reading scores in the whole state.
Yeah, well, that's what our vice principal told us at the time. And so, yes.
Oh, man, I mean, he could have said this. He could have said, you know, San Francisco Bay Area. He could have said the city, but the whole state. I mean, my goodness, what did that make you feel as a child?
Well, yeah.
You might say, well, my goodness, I can't do anything about that. The state is really big.
You know, and the thing is that we were so influenced by art and particularly music and poetry that probably rolled off our back. I mean, you know, we used to, like, cut and go across the bridge to Berkeley to recite poetry. So, you know, we had, when he said that, it probably rolled off our back, but I thought of it many years later, however, to be in that situation and to rise out of it, to win a National Endowment for the Arts Award for poetry, for instance, coming from a background like that, had everything to do with finding alternative ways of learning.
Mhm. Right. Yeah. So, talk a little bit about some of these writers that you were reading that influenced you, and today who are you reading?
Well, you know, the good thing is that a number of those writers are people that I have been able to meet, that I met later in my life and continue to meet. So I refer to that book, 3,000 Years of Black Poetry, that that's when I first was introduced to Gwendolyn Brooks. But reading that poem, we are the pool players poem, which kids have read and been influenced by. I was one of those kids that read that poem and had the arrogance to say, oh, I could do that. And I tried. And again, years later, to leave San Francisco and go to Chicago and to actually meet her and to become close to her, the first Black poet to win the Pulitzer Prize. She was so giving. And in that same book, there were artists like Hakeem Adepoti, Amiri Baraka, Nikki Giovanni. These are all people who I've met not only years ago, particularly Hakeem Adepoti and Amiri, but Nikki Giovanni. And recently, I had the opportunity to be with all of them because of a project I'm working on, a publishing project that's mixing images and poetry, called Of Poetry and Protest. Well, they're famous of poetry and protest. So we've been shooting images of these poets. So again, to be in the presence and to have been influenced by these people from my youth and still to have a connection to them to today has been a great joy.
Oh, that is so wonderful. I love Gwendolyn Brooks, and I'm so happy she came out here to the Berkeley. She was actually at UC Berkeley when I saw her for the first time. And she spoke on and on. It was just, she was just so gracious, you know, with her time. And afterwards, you were able to, like, go talk to her and shake her hand. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And, wow, yeah. And speaking of Gwendolyn Brooks, you actually got a literary award, the Gwendolyn Brooks Significant Illinois Poets Award, which is, I'm sure, you know, is really precious to you, along with the National Endowment of the Arts Creative Writing Fellowship. So,
yeah, that winning that award, Gwendolyn, as I always refer to it as one of my favorite awards, because she, it's not something you apply for. She just kind of keeps her eye, and that award I won simultaneously with a close friend in Chicago, Julie Parson Nesbitt, and she awarded award at the same time. And I have to say, I think that it was both for poetry, but also because of that connection to community. We're very, very engaged in, as poet activists. And I think that had something to do with it as well, in addition to the writing. Because, you know, Gwendolyn, she was quite the technician, I mean, when it came to writing. And she inspired me because she combined that mastery of craft along with just a wonderful way of reading poetry. You know, I heard her calling it performance, but if you ever hear her read that poem on We Real Cool, you're embarrassed to read it yourself. So she has that wonderful combination of those two worlds.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, you were born in Baton Rouge. I remember last time, well, the first time we spoke, we talked about off the air and maybe a little bit on the air about our Louisiana roots and growing up in San Francisco. And you mentioned you're talking now about Chicago, where you lived for a while, but you also lived in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and I was in Addis this summer for the first time. What a big city.
Oh, yeah. So that was the first time you'd been there?
Yes. My first time to East Africa, since I was flying Ethiopia Airlines, I said, well, you got to, I mean, everything starts in Addis. So I'm like, well, I might as well get off the plane. So I got off there first and hung out in Addis for 2 weeks. I went to Lalibela, went to Gondor, went to Bahadur, and then back to Addis. It was quite wonderful, and I'm definitely looking forward to exploring more of the country.
Yeah, isn't Lalibela absolutely beautiful?
Oh, my God, yes, it is. I spent 2 days there just sort of taking in all of the wonderful, those cathedrals built, you know, in a mountain, like carving from inside out. I mean, it's so amazing.
Yeah, not very many people are aware of that, but it should be one of the wonders of the world, those rock-huge churches.
Isn't it a wonder of the world, or isn't it? Each time I went into one, I think there are like 12 or 13 of them, I would say, this is my favorite. And then the next, I see another one, oh, no, this one's my favorite now.
You know, I actually went to the place where Ethiopia claims to have the Ark of the Covenant.
That's the one. Did they bring it out for you?
Well, you know, the thing is that there is this little structure that, you know, at the time at least, it looked like if a strong wind came, it could blow it over. But the Ark of the Covenant is in that structure, and it was guarded by a single soldier, an old man with a rifle that looked like World War II. And so you kind of have to believe that it's in there. And but where they do allow you to go in is another structure that holds all the different, many of the crowns from various emperors. And so the crown of Menelik is inside of that structure. And we were allowed to go in there, but we were not allowed to go into where the Ark of the Covenant is supposed to be. That's something I still plan on writing about, that experience at some point. It's been a while.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to read your reflections on that. Yeah, I want, like, these different, they have these Lalibela crosses, and they have all these different crosses, and I didn't get a chance to go to a ceremony, to go to a church ceremony, but I want to definitely go to one, because I wanted some company, and because I knew I wasn't going to understand the language of the ceremony. And the time I was going to go was 6 o'clock in the morning on the Sunday that I was leaving. So, I can always what?
You can always go back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going back. Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. Yeah. I just love how within just part of the culture, you know, the spirituality just was just permeable. I mean, like, you could just feel it. And, you know, it was just like the air you breathe. It was just everyone just was participated in that aspect of the culture. Mm-hmm. It's a really different type of place. I don't think I'd ever visited a place where, I mean, you know, like, you couldn't tell Muslim from Christian because of the, you know, the women, they both cover, you know, and then the men cover too. And the whole country, I think they were all fasting for 2 months. So when I got there, they weren't doing fasting food anymore, which was vegan or vegetarian, mm-hmm. which was perfect for me. But I couldn't fasting food because everybody was eating their meat because, you know, that was over.
Yeah, well, that culture is just absolutely fascinating, and having that was where being there for 5 years had a big impact on me as a writer. One, because I was there to do. I was a foreign correspondent, and I was one of the places I was working for was freelancing for the BBC, and also writing for some magazines that were focused on Africa, but based in London. And so every day I was writing, researching. I actually stopped writing for poetry for a while because I needed to hone my journalistic skills. At one point, I remember an editor from a London-based magazine rejecting one of my articles, and they told me that there was too much poetic license in the article. And I thought that was a compliment because I was a poet, but came to realize that that's not what they meant. And so I actually stopped writing poetry for a while, but once I got back to it, that experience in Ethiopia really influenced me as a writer quite a bit, both as a journalist and as a poet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. So how did you happen to be able to, I mean, you said you were working for the BBC, but how did you happen to choose Ethiopia in the first place to travel to? And then you stayed for 5 years. That's a very long time.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is much of what's happened to me in my life has just kind of come out of responding to circumstances, right, taking advantage of an opportunity and just jumping in. And that was the situation in Ethiopia. I refer to when I used to leave high school and go over to Berkeley to recite poetry. I also met Ethiopian students over there. I mean, and I got to know them. I mean, and when they went back, those students, they were influential in the early days of the Ethiopian Revolution, and it was through connections like that I was actually able to get over there. And I was only like, I think I was 22,
very young man, yeah.
When I was asked if I wanted to come, I didn't hesitate and just jumped at it. And I don't regret it. I always refer to that time as my university. My university in Africa.
Yeah. I was thinking when you were talking about your project presently, you know, the looking at what's it, the poets of protest. How did you describe the project that you're working on with photographs and poetry?
Yeah, it's a project that it's been working on it for since March of this year, and the first idea was that it was commemorating the March on Washington through poetry, and the I Have a Dream kind of feeling out what we wanted to do with this. So the first thing we did was to go across the country. It's featuring all African-American poets and shooting portraits with a great local photographer named Victoria Smith. And then to combine the poets' biographical kind of statement with their poem and their image. And as we went through this process, we began to start looking at it a little differently, still related to the civil rights era. We began to see that we wanted to do this in an arc that looks at poetry and protest from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, that this is still, you know, the murder of black boys and black men is such a critical issue in this country, and we want to address that through this look at the struggle and through the words of poets. And so that's something that I've been working on, and that's one of the great things about that is it's given me the opportunity to be in contact with so many wonderful poets across the country.
Wow, what a wonderful project. I was just thinking about Mary Baraka's Somebody Grew Up America, and I played that for my students. Actually, that was one of their projects, writing projects, to listen to the poem, to read it, to read, you know, sort of what happened around that particular poem that the then poet laureate of New Jersey, the state of Newark, wrote, and so some really wonderful responses to the piece, and so I played it for one of my classes yesterday, so it was really fresh in my mind, and thinking about, you know, 9/11's anniversary, and as well as the upcoming anniversary of the bombing of the church in Birmingham, where the four little girls were killed, and wondering if you all are going to touch on any of that in your conversation, you and Louise, tomorrow at the DeYoung Museum in the art, you know, as you know, a means for healing. Your talk, are you all going to sort of touch on some of the historic events that are still a part of, you know, maybe our collective trauma as a nation?
Yeah, I think that we, you know, always try to make that connection between history and contemporary events. And the thing is that if I use the term, the kind of arc of history earlier, but you can see that there is still, that much of the struggle is still the same. You know, many of the battles are still the same, that there have been great advances made, but we still have a long way to go. And so we are living in a time right now where there is an attempt to drag us backwards, legislation. There is, through outright violence, through censorship, so the many of these struggles that I know I was engaged in many, many years ago are the same struggles today. So, yeah, we'll be connecting both the kind of historical connections as well as contemporary reflections these struggles.
Right, yeah. Well, I want to conclude our conversation with one of your pieces that you sent me. Perhaps you could maybe talk about, I've got both, Brain on Ice. What an interesting image, Brain on Ice.
That's the one you're using?
And then Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge. You know, both very, the titles are quite captivating. So if you could tell us about these two pieces.
Well, the first piece, well, the Brain on Ice piece, which is not the subtitle of that, is the L Train poem. And it's interesting because that is a poem that is to some degree about profiling and about people looking at you simply based on the color of your skin. And it, in this case, the incident takes place on the L Train, which is Chicago's version of the BART, and so because of what you look like, because of the color of your skin, people run away or they don't want to be next to you, and so I find that some of these early poems that are in my first book, We Are All the Black Boy, and they continue into the Armageddon of Funk, are about that persistent issue, and the.
Before you tell us about the second one, I thought about Brent Staples and his essay Just Walk on By, a black man. He's sort of commenting on you know, the black body in public space, particularly the male black body in public space. And he was in Chicago as well when he was. He had all those experiences that he talked about, and in this particular essay, which is another one that's been anthologized, it's been in lots of anthologies, and actually happens to be in my anthology that I'm using in my one of my textbooks this semester. So, was Ben Staples there when you were there? Do you know him, the writer?
I don't, and you know that poem was written quite a while ago. In the 90s is when the book was published, but the poem was actually written in 1988, and I was kind of moving back and forth at the time between Chicago and Philadelphia, and it was an issue in both places. So kind of that poem is being written in Chicago and Philadelphia, but I don't know. I don't know if it was.
Okay. Yeah. I'll send you a link to his essay. I think
Great.
You find it. I think you like it because it's speaking to what you're talking about in this particular poem. And then the second poem, Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge.
Yeah, well, that's dedicated to the great trumpet player Malachi Thompson. And I was actually
at
the lounge when I was inspired to write that. I was watching another poet, a great poet named Marvin Tate, perform. And we were reading in part of a series, and this is where this comes from, but it kind of takes the, references history and uses cornbread as a way to talk about, what's happened to the experiences of black people, both going back historically as well as kind of contemporary. But it uses, I guess I have to let people hear it to see what the illusion is about.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, I want to let people know again that we're speaking to Michael Warr, and he and Louise Rodriguez are giving a talk tomorrow at the DR Museum from 3 to 4:30 in the Corrett Auditorium. And it is a free event. Seating is on a first come, first served basis. So, and the Golden Gate, the Dion Museum is located in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and it's very easy to find.
50 Hagiwara Tea Garden, Hagiwara. That's 50 Hagiwara Tea Garden in San Francisco in Golden Gate Park.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. And so are you all going to share poetry as well? Because I know you all have actually collaborated on some work.
Well, I'm definitely going to be reading a few poems, and Luis is going to be sharing the experience from the Arts for Healing and Social Change, one of his latest books. And, we'll be talking about some of the work that we've done together.
Okay, super. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. And we're going to close one of your two pieces, and then I want to close the show with Hallucinating at the Velvet Mouth. So we're going to play your Brain on Ice, the L Train poem.
Great. I appreciate it.
Okay. Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's good talking to you. Hope
good
to see everyone
to
tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Oh, yeah, definitely. Bye-bye. Have a good rest of the day.
Thanks.
There's a seat right next to me on the Milwaukee L, obviously vacant, awaiting some loop-bound occupant. Riders from Ukrainian village or maybe Warsaw rush past me in righteous but ignorant horror, not calmed by my Da Vinci tie or Bass Boy penny loafers, apparently not reassured by my literary look, unmoved by my perusal of the New York Review of Books. To them, I am Cabrini Green strapped to an attaché case, and for instilled fear of being robbed, stabbed, raped, or worse, converse with incoherently, they dare not sit next to me. I am the color purple in a navy blue overcoat. I am Bigger Thomas on his way to work. I may be Nat Turner on urbanized revolt. I am Mandingo with a big, thick, black Toshiba laptop. I am Superfly with Oxford collar and Harvard law degree. An invisible do-rag hovers above my missing Malcolm X shades. There's a bulge in my pocket, and it just might be a blade. I am the stereotypical cause-effect that masochistically strikes them blind. I am the charred rope with which they hang their consciousness during terrorized imprisonment in Hollywood for matted blackness. It's an undefiled seat adjacent to the door opening at the same loop stall outside the Deco Art marble plantation in which we all are hourly enslaved.
So that was Michael Warr, and again, he and Luis Rodriguez are going to be at the Young Museum tomorrow afternoon, so you definitely want to catch that. We are joined in the studio by Valerie Cooper, who is going to tell us about a project that she's working on, and she's going to have sort of a little sneak preview at the African American Museum and Library in Oakland this weekend. Good morning, Valerie. It's so good to have you on.
Good morning. It's such a pleasure, and I'm so excited to be on. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. So tell us about this project that you're going to be giving us a little sneak preview on.
Well, it's called, the project is called Catton and Scatton Jazz Divas. Actually, BCBD, Catton and Scatton Jazz Divas. And so what I'm presenting tomorrow is just a sneak preview of one of the divas. There are actually four divas, and they are Billie Holiday, Carmen McRae, Betty Carter, and Dinah Washington. So tomorrow, just a sneak preview of Dinah Washington.
Okay. Oh, wow. So tell us a little bit about Dinah Washington, for those who don't know her.
Well, Dinah was a jazz performer. Actually, she performed recordings in jazz, blues, R&B, pop. But she was known for blues primarily. She was considered queen of the blues when she was alive. Queen of the blues, queen of the jukebox, queen of the jam session. She was a magnificent vocalist.
Yeah. What songs are you going to be singing of hers? What songs are you going to be singing of hers?
Tomorrow pretty much is basically a monologue with one song.
Oh.
And it's primarily a sneak preview of the show. It's not her entire piece. So the song I will be performing tomorrow is All of Me, which is a jazz standard. Now, she made the song What a Difference a Day Made popular. That's one of her signature pieces. But tomorrow, given what I'm presenting tomorrow, we thought the most appropriate song would be All of Me. And she has her own way of presenting it, or her own way of putting her niche on the song, her stamp on a song. She has a specific way of presenting. And I'm not exactly trying to be Diana Washington. No one can really totally become Diana Washington, but I think that there is something there in her, the way she presents, that I can bring out and display in front of the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us about Diana Washington's life and what attracted you to her and the other divas. Maybe tell us a little bit about the other divas that are coming up. And when is the full production? What's the target date for that?
Well, we had a date scheduled for the 27th of September, but we decided to push it back into maybe November or early December. The show came together because after years of studying jazz and studying other genres of music, I began with my music interest at Cal State Hayward. I used to I took classes in operatic music and studied a number of Italian arias, and then I went from there to studying privately with a number of local performers, learning pop tunes, learning jazz, learning Negro spirituals. I actually performed with The Voices of Legacy, which was a terrific experience, and learned a lot of Negro spirituals. And after years of just being in music and learning and performing, I discovered that my grandparents and my mom and dad, stepdad, had the same birth date as Billie Holiday, Carmen McRae, Betty Carter, and Diana Washington. And I felt compelled to really tell their story and create something around that whole concept. And that's how this my show was. The concept came together. I began by performing in living rooms. My first performance of the show was in a living room in Oakland. And I'm still looking at living rooms, actually, performing the one-woman show there. It was a terrific experience. And I'm still just sort of putting the word out there, looking for another opportunity to do that.
Yeah, so if someone's interested in hosting you in their living room, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website. It's called expressmoments.com, E-X-P-R-E-S-S, moments.com. And basically, you can get all of the information there about my show and a few other things that I'm involved in. I'm also involved in wellness and been working as a fitness professional for a number of years.
Yeah, that's correct, because I know I saw you last on your bicycle. But you didn't mention, you know, I haven't seen you as a performance artist yet, but I have seen you in your fitness mode. So it'd be really great to hear you sing. Well, I've heard you sing before, but I haven't seen your show.
I remember your poetry events, and I still have the flyer where I came and presented a poem. I think it's been a number of years, though, but I really enjoy those events that you put on at the library.
Oh, your website is very nice. Yeah. So, and I see some gigs where you are performing outdoors. Tell us some more about yourself. You are from Texas, Wichita Falls, Texas. And you were raised on a farm in Queen City, Texas. you've been a writer. Actually, you're a writer. You talk about your writing and its impact on your life and your auntie, Syra. Talk a little bit about, sort of growing up in Texas on a farm. That's really, I don't know, there are not that many people that have that experience anymore. because all the farms are being covered over and we're building housing on them, particularly in some of the places here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, yeah. At the time, it felt really boring and all that, but I had fun. I was the kind of person that loved to play outdoors. I didn't like being inside, but it was fun. I mean, we had plum trees, all kinds of fruit trees around the farm. We had a pasture and a huge garden, and it was real country living, you know, dirt roads. And everything. I mean, we had cows and horses and pigs and chickens and all that. So it was a great experience, and I've written about it a number of stories. I was a member of a small writing group here in Oakland. You remember Mahmoud Rahman? He's gone on to
publish. Yeah, how's Mahmoud doing?
Yeah, I used to be a member of his writing group, which was so exciting. I loved that. And hopefully I'll be a part of another writing group one day. I wrote a number of stories in that group. They were never published. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, maybe I should put them on my blog. I don't know.
Yeah, but how's Mahmoud doing? Did he move to the South Asia?
He went to Bangladesh, I think, for a number of years, and now he's back in the Bay Area. He's moved around quite a bit, but he's back,
And since then,
I think he's published at least three books.
He sure has published lots of books. That's really wonderful. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that would be really super to be able to read some of your short stories. That'd be really lovely. Because you write about on your blog, on your website, about your grandparents, Lodi Wick and Marjorie Green, that they raised you and your cousins. So did you have a different type of your grandparents raised you? Were your parents there too? Or, like, did you all live there on the farm together? Parents and grandparents?
No, my mother, I was...
Hello? Oh, I don't hear her. Oh, Valerie, call me back. We've lost Valerie for a minute, so she will call us back. And in the meantime, while we're waiting for her to call us back, we will play another one of Michael Ward's pieces. Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge.
When Malachi blew his horn, I dreamed of cornbread, yellow mounds with burnt edges on the velvet culinary altar. His sharp cut riffs morphed into squares of cornbread islands, floating in streams of warm butter, clinging to the ribs of my memory, speaking in trumpet tongues of passages and uprisings, ancient pain and good times jiving, sacred beats and blues timing, drive-by crying and signifying, an opiate inside of oppression, a crater chunk of bacon-infused sweet potato, chicken-smothered maple pecan, custard-filled, smackling, crackling, jalapeno-inflamed cornbread. The crepe of the slaves now sold at Whole Foods in this jazz-drenched town built of golden bricks and smokestacks, billowing fumes of corn on the cob and catfish. My mind lost in music and metaphysics, reminiscing the Sunday manna served beside my mother's succotash.
That was Michael Warr, and that particular piece appears in the Armageddon of Funk. And it's a collaborative piece. Todd Brown created the music for Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge, and a few years ago he performed this piece with Ethiopian vocalist and songwriter Miklisa Dalo and her band on the Fire Ire. And we've actually had McLeod on the air many times. And McLeod, oh my goodness, McLeod has a concert coming up. Ooh, I hope we haven't missed it. But anyway, our guest, Valerie Cooper, is back in the studio, and she's going to start out, since we didn't catch any of her answer to my question about her grandparents raising her and her parents. So, Valerie, welcome back. And
thank you.
Tell us what about your grandparents raising you and your mother and father, you know, not being present necessarily during that period in your life.
Oh, it was a very good experience. And, you know, being a kid, sometimes there wasn't enough to, but we found playing in the yard and playing around with the neighbors, which were maybe up the road piece, you know, and so we found things to do. It was very quiet upbringing, but you know, it was a good experience. I guess there's a number of things I'm forgetting right now. I'm glad I wrote about them, but it was, you know, just an experience that I cherish today, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you say that that the gospel and spiritual music of the Cherokee Country and Western music and the rhythm and blues of Motown permeated your existence. And you say the short story that you wrote in high school and college received praise and sparked your writing desire. You write that you'd never forget writing a script for a television commercial in high school that received a fantastic comment from your teacher, and that was a moment, one of those indelible moments in your life. And then you moved to San Francisco, the area where that experience also inspired you to want to write and decide what to write about. And more recently, you found out that your mother loved to write. So talk to us a little bit about sort of your writing life. You give us a whole lot of wonderful information about, people definitely need to visit expressmoments.com to read this wonderful sort of memoir almost that you have on your opening page with copies of documents from Cal State University Hayward and New College of Law. So are you an attorney as well?
No, I'm not, actually. You know, I worked for John Burris a number of years, but I became an employee at that firm years ago because I was in law school at the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought I wanted to be, you know, in law, but I went to New College of Law, which is one of the oldest public, at the time it was one of the oldest public interest law schools in the nation. And then I got a job at John Burris' office, which was fantastic. I worked on the Rodney King case, and I got to meet Johnny Cochran, and worked on Tupac Shakur came into the office, worked on his deposition, and a number of other high-profile cases. But it was just a great place to work, great place to meet mm-hmm. the movers and shakers of the city, and I just was fascinated. I was very excited about being there. And no, I didn't mm-hmm. complete law school, but it was mm-hmm. a learning experience for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned that you also worked on Chris Webber and Mark Curry's cases. And and I was just thinking, I actually worked in that building for the Volunteer Center on the sixth floor, And it's interesting, I don't remember meeting you there, though. And I used to ride my bike to work and park it in the basement.
I remember seeing you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's when we first got to know each other, I think. Yeah, I remember seeing you come into the building. Yeah, it was very new, very, very, very new friendship. Beginnings right there.
Yeah, and
there.
Yeah, and you've got some really wonderful pictures here on your website. And then you write about, you know, that you've also been in musical theater as well.
That was one of the most enjoyable times when I was in theater. And I did that off and on, pretty much. When I first came to California, I was part of a beauty pageant, Miss Black Universe Beauty Pageant, which was held at the Paramount Theater, actually. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was looking forward to getting into more into the theater, more into acting, more into singing. And so I was beginning to prepare myself, taking voice lessons, piano lessons, tap dancing lessons, and eventually got a few parts here and there, paying parts, and some non-paying parts. But it was interesting, you know, the things that I did do, and I looked forward to more things, and then I realized no one's going to do it for me. I've got to write my own, you know, my own play, my own show. And so, because I was constantly looking for someone to say, oh, you would be great for that or this. But I realized, you know, you've got to, if you see something and you feel something, you've got to just bring it out there. And so I began to write my own little scripts. And all along the way, I was sort of scripting things. You know, I have notes that I kept for years, and I decided not to throw them away. Just scan them and keep them, because this has been my life of writing little scripts for myself in small situations and so forth. But, that part of my life, being on the stage, was very fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you mentioned that you were in O Magnum Mysterium. There was a play, and you were a singer in that particular piece. That was by Edward Blair Performance Lab, and then you Porgy and Bess, the opera and play. And actually, that's being remounted here in the Bay Area this season, 2013-14 season, at one of the one of our theaters in the Bay Area. You were a singer. Did you have like a role, or were you a singer in the choir, or the chorus?
Which one is that? Porgy and Bess?
The Porgy and Bess, the opera and play. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that was with...
It was Mary Cobb Hill, Voice of Legacy, Negro Spiritual Singers.
The Negro Spiritual Voices of Legacy, I think that was with them.
Yeah, were you part of the chorus, or did you have one of the roles in the play?
I think I was part of the chorus in that, but I actually played a role when we combined Porgy and Bess with Tremonisha, which was a play written by Scott Joplin.
Yeah, that's beautiful, yeah.
And so, I had a role in that play, and we sort of put them together on stage. And we had excerpts of both those plays, so I forgot to mention Tremonisha. But I was on stage as a background singer in Porgy and Bess.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, Tremonisha was performed at Stern Grove. They had a huge community choir, and that was I really liked that story. And then the Rhythmettes, you were a dancer in that particular piece, and that was directed by Eddie Brown. And you were in the movie Sister Act with Whoopi Goldberg. You were an extra. And Whoopi Goldberg is actually, she has done a film for Moms Mabley, and that's a part of the Mill Valley Film Festival, which opens the first weekend in October in Mill Valley with screenings throughout that particular area. So that's going to be really exciting to see the Moms Mabley film. Yeah.
I would love
And then
to
you
see
were in
that.
Celestial Celebrations as the role of Carmen McRae, which you are have recreated in your a tribute to legendary jazz singers. What's the piece called that you're going to be giving us a preview of tomorrow at AMBLA?
It's called The One Woman Show. Basically, mm-hmm. I have created a one woman show. Originally, it was a play for at least 12 characters. But I had to just break it down into a one-woman show because of financial reasons. So the piece is now called Cadman Scatman. Well, it's BCBD, Cadman Scatman Jazz Divas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice. And the African American Museum and Library is located at 659 14th Street in Oakland. It's at the cross street of Martin Luther King Jr. And you're going to be the AMLO Jazz Trio. Are they going to accompany you?
No, it's a cappella pretty much. Unless we've been talking about I'll bring my sheet music for all of me and present it to the keyboardist there. But it's primarily something I can do a cappella. However, there may be some accompaniment there.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Valerie, on this sneak preview, and looking forward to seeing the full stage production. And let's stay in touch. Definitely want to hear some of your stories, and certainly see you on stage as a performance artist.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Well, I hope you have a great rest of the day, and looking forward to seeing you around town.
Okay. Have a great
day. Take good care. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's see. Good morning. We are joined in the studio. Claire, are you in the studio with us?
I am here. How are you?
Oh, fine. You called in a little early, so I saw you just sort of hanging out in the green room.
Yes, I was hanging out.
Listening. Yeah, it's good to have you on to talk about this wonderful program that that you all are sponsoring in San Mateo, you know, bringing together all these wonderful writers to talk about literacy. And let's see, who else is in the studio? I'm trying to think, because Raphael is going to be calling in, but I don't think that's Raphael because it's not the right area code.
Oh, I think it's me. This is Nadia
Lafayette.
I'm with
Nadia.
I
just saw your email. I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. Call on in. Oh, super. Excellent. So, Claire, you are a lifelong resident of San Mateo, California. You've been married over 60 years. Wow, that is so amazing.
Yes,
ma'am. And you have three successful daughters, and you're a distinguished alumna from the College of San Mateo. Great institution. And you're a founder of Jazz on the Hill. Wow, that is
really
so phenomenal. Yeah, you should be proud. You should be proud of all those things. But, oh, my goodness, it gets better and better. So what year is Jazz on the Hill in now?
Jazz on the Hill is, I really don't know, because they took a hiatus. There was construction at the college, and they took off for a couple of years. So I guess it's about 12 or 15 years old, somewhere in that area.
Okay, so it started maybe about 15 years ago, but not continuous, because a little break in there.
Right.
Wow, that is so awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
That is really great. Yeah, because your media sponsor is KCSM. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Wow, wonderful. And you are joining us to talk about this program that you and your friends are going to be sharing with us. So why don't you tell us about this program that's going to be happening in, is it next week?
Yes, it's next weekend, Saturday.
Yeah, wow. Well, this month is just racing by.
Right. Saturday, September 21st from 10 to 4 at Martin Luther King Recreation Center in San Mateo. It's it's called Authors for Literacy. It started out to be 100 Authors for Literacy, but as people continued to come on, we decided to cut it down so that everyone would get a chance to speak. I'm referring to this as a book fair on steroids. Normally, when you go to a book fair, you just wander around and you look at people's books. But at this event, every author is going to have the opportunity to read or discuss their book for at least 15 minutes. So it starts at 10 and 10 on the dot in four different rooms. We have a room for fiction, two rooms for nonfiction, and a room for poetry. So all these people will all be reading all day until around a little after two, and then Belva Davis, who is a retired television personality in the Bay Area, will have the opportunity to speak. And after her, Dr. Joy DeGruy, who is a psychologist from the University of Oregon. Belva wrote a book called Never in My Wildest Dreams, and Dr. DeGruy has written a book called
Slave Syndrome.
Yes, post-traumatic slave syndrome. And people are calling from all over saying they want to be here. We have Nadia, who's going to be with us. She lives in North Carolina. She's coming to do a piece that she wrote called Help Me, Nadia.
I am here. It's an article from Not in My Family. It's an anthology on AIDS, and it's just a younger person's approach to looking at AIDS in the African American community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have Rafael Jesus Gonzalez. Good morning, Rafael. How are you?
I'm fine, Wanda. How are you? It's a pleasure to hear you.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah, Claire is on the air along with Nadia, and they didn't know that you had joined us. And so what book are you going to be sharing?
Good morning.
You have lots of work.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, he's doing his poetry from Lunatic Muse. Is that correct, Rafael?
That's correct. Uh-huh. Well, it will be a mixed reading. more than from the Lunatic Muse, I'm going to focus in my reading on poems, on literacy, the art of reading.
Wonderful.
The art of the use of words, which is, to tell you the truth, very much embattled in the nation today with the destruction of our public education system.
Right. Right. One of the reasons this was started is because there is an organization in San Mateo called the North Central Neighborhood Association. North Central is the oldest section of the city. It's the city where the majority of people of color reside. And they put on a poetry and essay contest every January in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. And they have run out of money. What they do is all of the children from the San Mateo Foster City School District participate. But these youngsters work their little hearts out writing about Martin Luther King. And I think they deserve a nice remuneration after they've worked so hard. So at one time, the organization was able to give a nice gift to these youngsters who would win first, second, or third prizes. But with the economy taking a dip, and people not being as generous as they have been in the past, we decided we would ask authors. It's about literacy. It's watching youngsters do a wonderful work. So I've asked all these authors, and they have come together beautifully. I am so proud of the writing community that I could just burst. They have come forward and said, yes, the authors are paying for this. The authors have paid a fee to be involved in this event. And the money the authors have put up is going to these youngsters. I'm hoping that the organization will keep this thing going. I'm a little long in the tooth, and I am going to give it to them and let them finish working on it.
Right. Thank you, Claire. And I want to mention that Anita Webb is the person that Claire Mack is working with. And Anita is chair of the North Central Neighborhood Association that organization that hosts the this writing for Martin Luther King Jr. Each year, and North Central is northwest sector of San Mateo County, a city of about 20 miles south of San Francisco and 30 miles north of San Jose. And this is also the oldest part of the city, and as Claire already mentioned, it's the part of the city where most of the people of color live. And now more people of Latin heritage also reside in this particular community and neighborhood where the majority of people of African heritage live. And however, the black population has decreased over the years. And because, let's see, Claire is a writer, she thought that the community of writers can make a difference. So, Claire, I hope that you're going to share some of your writing with us this morning on the air. And the writers who have responded, they all paid a $25 registration fee. They have responded from as far away as Nairobi, Kenya, to be a part of the event. So it's really exciting, this particular event that's going to be happening on Saturday, September 21st, from 10 to 4 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Recreation Center in San Mateo. So, Raphael, let me read a little bit of your bio and then let you continue what you were saying about literacy. Your birthday is coming up next month, October 10th, so happy birthday in advance. Yeah, and you were raised in a bicultural, bilingual environment of El Paso, Texas. And you have USA and you have Juarez. How do you pronounce that? I ask you that every time I try to read this. How do you pronounce the... How do you pronounce after Juarez? You've got, I don't know.
Chihuahua.
And then you make Chihuahua.
Hey, like the little dog.
Oh, yes, okay. We have the family on both sides of the Rio Grande. You had just graduated from El Paso High School when you joined the U.S. Navy in the hospital corps and served in the Marine Corps with the rank of staff sergeant. After military service, you attended the University of Texas, El Paso, then Texas Western College of the University of Texas in pre-med, taking time to attend the Universidad Nacional Autónoma, Mexico, where you study archaeology, Mexican literature, Mexican history, and Mexican philosophy. During this time, you published your first poems and academic articles in English and Spanish. On receiving the bachelor's degree, you decided to dedicate yourself to literary studies, which you did under a Woodrow Wilson Fellowship and a National Education Act Fellowship. You did your graduate studies at the University of Oregon. As professor of literature and creative writing, you've taught at the University of Oregon, Western State College of Colorado, Central Washington State University, the University of Texas, El Paso as visiting professor of philosophy, and at Laney College in Oakland, where you founded the Department of Mexican and Latin American Studies. You have a very long bio, which I'm not going to read all of, but I want to mention that your collection of poems, El Asador de Juegos, The Maker of Games, published by Casa Editorial in San Francisco, 1977 to 1978, went through two editions. A selection of your moon poems, which is so wonderful. Raphael writes moon poems every full moon. La Musa Lunatica, The Lunatic Muse, which he's going to be sharing at the event, was published by Pandemonium Press in Berkeley, California in 2009. And you've been nominated 3 times for a Pushcart Prize. And you, as a visual artist, your work has been exhibited at the Mexican Museum of San Francisco, Galleria de la Raza, the Oakland Museum of California, where you are one of the, I don't know if you're a consultant, you could tell us what the role is, but I know that you are really central in the Oakland Museum of California's Dia de los Muertos programming each year. So take it away, Raphael.
Well, as you might imagine, I'm very passionate about education and teaching the young people to read and to investigate and to and to reason, as you know, Wanda, from my work, I am not very pleased with the condition of the country at this time. I don't know that I have ever been totally pleased with it, but it seems that we are in a very grave crisis, not only environmentally but socially. When you just stop to think that one out of every 32 of us is either on probation or jail, it raises the hackles on the, on my neck. It's just intolerable. So a lot of my writing, which I wish could be totally devoted to a celebration of life and of love, it tends to be rather polemic. And one of a protest. So that's where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. With a caveat that whatever protest we do, whatever we do, has to come from a basis of love and of joy. And that's what we have to teach our kids and our young people, is love and joy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that should be the basis.
You've got, Raphael, you have a history of work in the civil rights movement as well. And some of the famous veterans of the civil rights movement are personal friends of yours. And I read some of the things that you've written, as well as, you know, we've conversed about that. But we wanted you to talk a little bit about the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the I Have a Dream speech and the upcoming anniversary of the bombing of the church in Birmingham where, you know, four little girls were murdered. And then we had Trayvon Martin, you know, that particular trial and the outcome and the further drama around the killer and his family. And then we have other instances of that type of thing happening here in the San Francisco Bay Area and elsewhere. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. And then Nadia, I'm going to come back to you. I haven't forgotten you're in the studio. Hey, Raphael?
I'm listening.
Yeah, well, we have just very recently celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and Martin Luther King's voicing of his dream, which is one of the most important pieces of U.S. Modern literature, where he laid out what was his vision for a society based upon justice, equality, compassion, and needless to say, that was of tremendous importance to the consciousness of the nation. 50 years later, very little has been accomplished of Martin Luther King's vision. It is still the basis and the backbone of all the struggle for justice in the nation. But shortly after the March on Washington, relatively, there was a backlash and what they call the conservative revolution. And we are feeling that very, very strongly, where the three branches of government seem to be taken over by the right. Not seem, but have. Where the Supreme Court itself is a very scary Supreme Court that does not have the interest of democracy as its first concern. And so the struggle goes on, and we have to keep that struggle alive, because we just, as a human race, will not survive unless we learn immediately how to honor the earth and heal it, and how to honor each other and respect each other. Essentially, that's it. When I think of the happenings at that time, the bombing of the church and the killing of the little girls, I am filled with sorrow, and I am filled with outrage. But I don't lose hope. I see the hope in the young people that I work with, who are full of life and who deserve much more than we provide for them. You know, we as a nation do not care much for our children. The greatest poverty levels are suffered by children who lack adequate medical attention, lack education, many lack shelter, lack food. So that's essentially where I am coming from.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you, Raphael. So we're going to come back to you, so prepare a poem for us. So Nadia, tell us about your writing career. I was trying to find a bio on you, but I'm not certain.
I'll just go right into it. You know, obviously, first of all, I want to acknowledge my grandmother, Claire Mack, and just how, you know, amazing that she is. And one thing that I love
your
about my grandmother. That is my grandmother. Is that above everything, she is really a person who is so much about what she says she's going to be about. So if she comes up with an idea and she wants to do something, she goes with all of her might to make it happen. And, you know, from a young child, I would go, you know, to my grandparents' house, and she would have my sister and I read encyclopedias and memorize poetry and figure it out from yourself, my lad, and all this stuff. And it would just completely annoy us. But she was just very much so about us being literate and being successful young women. So I went to college at University of Southern California. I was a creative writing major, and that was the first time that I was into writer's workshops. And I was able to come back to the Bay Area with my grandmother Claire and to be involved in some of her writing workshops and to just see these really accomplished women and all that they did and their writing and how it was such a connection to who they were. And one thing that I love about writing and literacy and just reading is that you so much get to tap into someone else's life and experience and thoughts and ideas. And sometimes in discussion, we're not able to do that, you know, or things don't come across as clearly, or people run over ideas and you can't really come back to it the same way that you can in the written word. And so, you know, my grandmother's work, she does so much, I want to say kind of historical fiction, where you mm-hmm. can really understand her background, her thought process, what was going on in San Mateo. There's such a beautiful history to it. So that was kind of my exposure to writing. The articles that I've had published are mainly about the African-American community. The piece that I'll be sharing is just about how, from my perspective, I felt as a young black woman that more of the emphasis was on KIDS or kids instead of AIDS instead of AIDS, and how we were more afraid of that than, you know, this horrific disease and how it spreads, and just kind of a perspective change, and how, especially as Black women, we have to be so vigilant about our bodies and our sexual activity, because we are the number one new cases of AIDS. It's not white homosexual males. And really, what is that saying about us as a people and a community, and just the integrity that we're taking with our bodies? So that's that. I'm still writing. I do creative writing here. I'm in North Carolina. I am an entertainment attorney. And I just think that what she's doing is just absolutely amazing to get these kids and the community excited about authors. You know, a lot of these people aren't just published, so it's not like someone, you know, picked them out of somewhere and gave them an enormous amount of money. These are people who had an idea, a thought, an expression, something that they wanted to communicate, and did everything they could to get it out there and to communicate that. And I think for everyone in the Bay Area, you know, it's such a beautiful testament that if you have something you want to say and you want to get out there, you can pick up a pen and write, or you can, you know, type away on your computer and put it online. You can self-publish. You can do so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Nadia, tell us how to pronounce your last name, and were you raised here in California, or were you raised in North Carolina, or did you go to North Carolina, you know, to practice?
You know, actually, my last name is pronounced Latte Yad. It's like drinking a latte and then a yad if you had an accent. My father is from Haiti, so my last name is French. I was raised in Los Angeles, in the entertainment industry. My parents are in the entertainment industry, but I frequented the Bay Area a lot. Even, you know, when Claire, my grandmother, was mayor, even before she was mayor, we used to come up a lot just to sweep the streets. She would wake us up at like 4 a.m. to get into the streets of San Mateo and sweep up. And it was annoying, but it was, you know, such a labor of love. And I really appreciate the Bay Area.
Wow. So you're Haitian American?
I am.
Okay. Wow. So since we're reflecting on sort of some legal statutes and some important dates, among them the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, the I Have a Dream speech, and the anniversary of September 11th, which just passed this week, and the anniversary of the 50th anniversary of the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church, where four little girls were killed in Birmingham, Alabama. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I heard you asking the same question to Raphael, and I think part of what you included in that, too, is the George Zimmerman trial, which I think is just very interesting. One of my friends in the Bay Area is a DA, and we have a lot of thoughts on it. But I think, you know, more than anything, you look at someone like Condoleezza Rice and, you know, how she was from Birmingham. I think she actually went to that church and what has come from her life.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can look at that on one side and look at what a huge success we can have with education and accessibility. And she's right there still at Stanford, Bay Area woman. Like what you can do when you actually have access to literacy. And then on the other hand, you can look at, you know, the George Zimmerman trial and what the outcome was of that case, Trayvon Martin's death, and the reality that there are so many young Black Americans who know of young Black men who have been murdered in this society by police officers, gang members, and so much more. So just that large disparity. And I just think it's such a balance where we all need to strive to get the Condoleezza Rice, but we all need to be very aware that racism is still alive. We don't all have the same access, and that we have a lot of mountains to climb and mountains to move. So, you know, as we're all trying to gain this American dream, not to forget about everyone else. And I think, you know, especially with some of the authors that Claire has coming to the event, I think there's such a large diversity to it so that we can all kind of look and see where we've come as a people in America and hear, you know, different people's perspective, like Raphael, which is more of an activist, and people who are out there in the street, you know, fighting against this stuff, and other people who have different points of view. I know Mark Little is coming, and he has a book called The Prodigal Republican, and so his thoughts are, you know, much different, very conservative, but it's just a diverse discussion, and I think what's cool about this event is that we can all get together, we can have discussions about current events, what's going on, and how we'd like to see, you know, our people and the laws and the government to move forward, and what we can all do individually to make a difference.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, sounds like this would be a great time for a poem. And then, Claire, I want you to, Nadia, sorry, I want you to figure out something you'd like to share, of your writing. And then, Claire, you're former mayor. I definitely want you to, after Raphael shares a poem, I want you to come back into the discussion and talk about your writing and some of the writers that people are going to meet at the event next week, and then share some of your writing. And, Nadia, we'll let you sort of wrap it up. So go ahead, Raphael, share some of your work with us.
All right. I'd like to share two poems with you, the thing. And I might mention here that I grew up bilingually and biculturally, so that almost everything I write is written both in Spanish and in English, which every piece stands as a single complete piece in two tongues. For the lack of time, I'll just read the English to you. But it's also in Spanish. The first one I will share with you is entitled "To My Students," and it carries an apogram. Quisiera saber lo que dicen esas basuritas, which is a quote from an illiterate Tarahumara Indian from my part of the world. And loosely translated is, I would like to know what those little fly droppings have to say, speaking about the letters on the page, wanting to know their meaning. You who can read, do not take it for granted. You who cannot, there are worlds, there are gods, yet to be quickened in your dreams. The worlds await to form on your tongue, the gods to tremble in your ears. These little marks, black as fly droppings on the page, and as small, speak to you. You do not hear. I cannot tell you the beginning of naming, only how it changes and magic sparks and sputters at the base of the skull. I do not know if there is answer. Perhaps our speaking is enough. Men, women have died always alone. These small blemishes on the page, their final legacy. Do not lose them, these the enchanted cinders of our stars. That was to my students. And because we're talking about Martin Luther King, a poem that I have dedicated to Martin Luther King Jr., entitled "After the Lecture." A woman said I was not polite to the opposition, that I was harsh and did not encourage discourse. Perhaps if I were Christ, I could say, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Or the queen, and apologize for stubbing my executioner's toes. But only if I knew the executioners were mine only. What courtesy have I the right to give to them who break the bones, the souls of my brothers, my sisters? Deny bread, books to the hungry, the children, medicine, healing to the sick, roofs for the homeless, who spoil the oceans, lay waste the forests and the deserts, violate the land, wage perpetual war. Affability on the lips of outrage is a sin and blasphemy I will not be guilty of. And that is dedicated to Martin Luther King, who was never guilty of blasphemy.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you, Raphael. That was beautiful. Mrs. Mack, Ms. Claire Mack, share with us all those things I mentioned to you before Raphael started reciting.
May I say this? I don't know Raphael, but I was online trying to find enough diversity because San Mateo is a majority Caucasian community, and I can't do anything that is not multicultural. And this man leapt out to me online, and Lord have mercy. I am so glad you're going to be a part of this. My heart is
Thank
over here
you.
Pounding. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My goodness. My goodness. Anyway. You hear my doorbell going off. hold on just a minute, please. But I'm going to read you.
Okay.
Good Lord. I'm going to read to you something from Sister Sam's and Sister Johnson. They started out in my first book called Imitation of Life, The Next Millennium. It was about a black and white, it was based on the movie, which I absolutely hate. When you ask most people about either one of the imitations of life, they say, oh, I just loved it. The funeral scene is so good. But it's one of the most racist movies ever made, and people don't look at it. Nonetheless, Sister Sam's and Sister Johnson came out of that book, and I turned them into entities of their own. And what they do is they live in San Mateo, and they break the law, and they never get caught, and they gossip, and they're just wonderful little old fat black women because there aren't any fat black gray-haired women on television as role models, and I definitely am, and I'd like to see me doing something on TV. I don't want to turn blonde like Barbara Walters, and I need some images. Anyway, Sister Johnson was a tall, dark-skinned, amply built woman with a very large derriere that always made her skirts hike up in the back. She knew children laughed at her from time to time. Her condition was called steatopegia, a physical enlargement of the buttocks. Parents and clergy scolded many children at the church when they were caught making fun of Mrs. Johnson's generous hind parts. Louetta Johnson kept her hair dyed a rich red, which did not go well with her burnt chocolate complexion. But Sister Johnson wasn't going to let her hair go gray. She was going to keep it nice and red, even though it was thinning. Girl, I've been hanging out with Miss Claire all these years. She'd go broke if I didn't support her. But Sister Johnson, you're getting a little bald up there. Don't you think you should use some Rogaine? I like it red, and red it'll be till I meet my maker, Louetta said emphatically. If it was me, I'd use some Rogaine, Alberta mumbled. It ain't you, Alberta, Sister Johnson said in a huff. Sister Alberta Sams was a short, taffy-colored dumpling of a woman who wore her hair dyed jet black in an old-fashioned crokinole finger wave style. Rarely, though, did anyone get to see all of those jet black waves on Sister Sam's head, because Sister Sam's had a wardrobe of hats that could fill the inventory of any milliner in the shopping mall. "Yes, I love crowns of all types. Everyone can't wear a hat, but I have a head for hats. I wear them so well." "No, she don't," Louetta Johnson said under her breath. But no one was going to dispute Alberta's claim. Mother Sam's hats were fur, feathers, straw, felt, cloches, sailors, Braytons, beanies, baseball caps, and the over-the-top flying saucer varieties. Everyone, every type of hat one could think of was in Sister Sam's collection. One day, she ran out of hat boxes and couldn't find one at her favorite hat store. So she went to the music store and started buying drum boxes to store her vast and varied assortment. That's an excerpt from Sister Sam's and Sister Johnson, The Neighborhood. Hello?
I'm there. I'm listening.
Wonderful, wonderful.
That was wonderful.
I write in dialect because my father was born in Brazos Bottom, Texas, and he and his sister and brother only had third grade educations. And for a long time in my life, I used to sneer at the Southernisms that my father and his brother and sister used. And now I'm celebrating it. It doesn't matter how you speak, as long as you're understood. Therefore,
certainly.
You know,
certainly. Yeah.
And this country celebrates accents from Ireland and from Sweden and from Germany. And I'm saying that I am going to celebrate my father's way of speaking. And he didn't speak as flatly as I speak in with Sister Sam's and Sister Johnson. But I think it's time to turn it around. What black people do in this country is wonderful. We are copied from the bottom to the top, and then people turn around and want to say that what we do isn't good. Collagen in lips is ugly to me, but I love big, fat, greasy lips on black people. There's a difference. People who go to the beach and get tanned, I was born with one and love every inch of my tan. And I love my granddaughter, bless her heart. I didn't tell you I was there, but anyway, I like what I do,
wow,
and I'm going to keep doing it.
Good for you.
Yeah, right.
Indeed.
So Mrs. Mack, how did your family, when did they come here from Texas?
My dad came from Texas. I am a very fortunate type of person. Nadia is a fourth-generation Californian. My grandmother, Eva Lycurgus, was born in Oakland, California in 1890-something. My mother was born in San Francisco, and I and my brothers and sisters were all born here in San Mateo. But my mother married a man from Texas, my dad, Bill Cullen, and my grandmother was married to Joseph Garrett from Virginia, Halifax County, Virginia. But all of these men came to California. My grandfather was a Buffalo soldier, and he landed at the Presidio. He had a business in San Francisco and met my grandmother and married her. And my dad was let off at the what do you call it? I'm not thinking of the right word. But he was at the Presidio and wandered his way down the peninsula and became the father of five beautiful children, I being the middle one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. And you're the former mayor of San Mateo?
Yes, three times.
Three times. Wow. What years? What's your tenure?
Oh, golly, I forget the years. I was elected in 1991, and I left 12 years later. And the only reason I left was because of term limits. I would have still been there had there not been term limits, but I also would probably be in an insane asylum had I stayed. So it was good that they term limited me out. It's like the little frog in the water who doesn't understand that he's dying because they've turned the heat up.
Wow. What an analogy. Oh, my goodness. Interesting. So could you give us the names of the other writers besides the wonderful writers that are on the air with us presently and yourself who are going to be participating in the event on Sunday the 21st? Not Sunday, but
okay, because there are over 60, I'm not going to give you everyone. I could only give you a few.
Okay.
State Senator Jerry Hill, who started in politics with me, is going to be there. Most people don't know that he's written a book called A Divorced Father. We have Barry Broad he's a lobbyist and a lawyer out of Sacramento. He is a fiction writer doing Requiem for the Damned. Of course, my granddaughter and Raphael will be there. We have Laurel Ann Hill, who's written Heroes Arise. That's fiction. We have, let's see, Eleanor Curry. She's doing a memoir. We have Les Williams, Tuskegee Airman, will be with us.
Nice.
Douglas Stewart, who is a poet. Marcus Clark, a young man who works for the city of San Mateo, has written something about hip-hop and music. Hmm. There's just such a wonderful array of people coming that it's going to – a young lady who's a lawyer who doesn't practice law. She works for BART. Her name is LaToya Ward, and her book is called Suffering, The Breakfast of Champions. I can't wait to hear what her book is about. Randy Silver, who was a photographer, and this man, I don't know how he earns a living because he does pro bono work for every organization in town, and he's done a book called The French Landscape, Images of a Special Light. So they're just 60-some-odd people coming who have written everything across the board. Let's see, another person. Oh, golly, there are just so many. and as I said, I picked up Raphael online. He spoke to me. His soul spoke to me. I was sitting in a hotel lobby a few months ago, and there was a convention for marriage and family counselors, and I picked up a woman in a bar, I can say, a lady named Holly Kennelly. She is a therapist from Arizona who's coming to be with us. She said, yes, I'd love to be a part. A young woman named Beverly Lacks, who is doing a book called 8 Cycles of 7. She's from Nairobi, Kenya. She lives there. She's lived there for the past 28 years. She's a native San Matean, but she's from another part of the world. McHenry Skip Norman, the son of Mady Norman, the black woman who played the maid in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. He's doing a memoir on his mother, this beautiful, beautiful woman. The book is called With Dignity and Grace. Gertrude Wilkes, an activist from East Palo Alto, she's written a fabulous memory called Gather Together. Tell me when you want me to stop because I can go on and on and on.
okay, go on for a couple more minutes.
Okay, we have, and I'm picking up Raphael right now, and we have a poet from Germany. Her name is Erika Goss. And I'm not finding the name of her book right now, but from Germany.
Mm.
People from all over the world are joining this event. And I think the reason it is so compelling is that you get a chance to read your work. There's a young woman named Joanna Nagler. She has done a book on debt-free, being debt-free and a spending plan. She lives right here in Burlingame. Another man named Frank Saunders has done a book of poetry called A Pot of Tea. Poetess Kalamu Kashe from East Palo Alto, Talk with the Children. Zena Butler has written a book of poems called On the Wings of Eagles. Audrey Kalman, Dance of Souls. We have a young black man out of San Francisco who has written fantasy, a book of sci-fi fantasy that the kids do, and he's doing this because he wants to reach an audience of color. Most of the books on fantasy are not about kids of color, so he is filling that niche. A poet named Sandra Lee Curry, the poet in me. Yvonne Cannon, a poet, counterclockwise from San Francisco. Lakeba Pittman, who has written a book of poetry called Breadcrumbs from the Soul, Finding Your Way Back Home. I am excited about this. People want literacy. My dentist said to me, please do something, because she put an ad online that she needed a hygienist for her office, and one of the young men sent back his application in Twitter speech. That's awful that he didn't know that you had to speak English. And Dr. Joy DeGruy, who we've discussed, that a young person would apply for a job and not realize that you have to speak in complete sentences and write the letter A-R-E, not R, not the letter R. It's just a young man from San Jose, Carl Ray, wrote a book called Cured. His father was killed in front of him in Alabama because Carl didn't say sir to a white man. The white man not only beat Carl Ray to a pulp, went to Carl's house and shot his father in front of him and killed him. You were speaking earlier about what's going on. I just was watching television and saw Ted Cruz, who has made an announcement to the Heritage Foundation that what we need in this country are more senators like Jesse Helms. Do you know what that man is saying?
Indeed.
Jesse Helms
we know what that
most
man is saying.
Prejudiced, biased packs of garbage that ever served this country. And he served this country from North Carolina or South Carolina for 30 years. This man did not want the Martin Luther King Day to be a holiday. He fought civil rights in every way that he possibly could. And we have a modern man in the United States Congress, United States Senate from Texas, who wants more people like Jesse Helms. I wanted to throw up. We're going backward in so many ways.
And he's not the only one.
Yes. Oh, no. He's not by himself.
Yeah.
Not by himself at all. So I had to get that in because I'm just sick about that. That is horrible. That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
We have a man named John Salona. He is a chef, and he's written a book called The Power Chef. Lisa Hammond, a PhD, who's written Achieve in Five. I told you about picking up this woman in a bar. Then we have a woman named Barbara Mack.
Well,
I think that's wonderful.
That's enough. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So I want to mention again to our audience that we're speaking to Mrs. Claire Mack, one of the organizers of 100 Authors for Literacy event, and it's a fundraiser for the North Central Neighborhood Association, and the event is on Saturday, September 21st at the Martin Luther King Center, 725 Mount Diablo Avenue in San Mateo. And is there a cost for the event?
No, it's free. It's free to the public. The most important thing to know.
Free to the public. Wow, wow.
Free.
And it's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, and authors have paid, which is a real sort of twist. But I'm sure you're taking donations, right, if people want to give a donation for the organization?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take any kind of money anyone wants to give because the cutest thing in the world is to watch these little children who are from all countries in the world, someone just recently from China, someone from South and Central America, and they say, Martha Luther King was a great man. It tears your heart. It tears your heart.
Right, yeah. And all of the proceeds go to Martin Luther King Essay and Poetry Contest, which, what year is it for the essay contest?
This is the 30,
been going
this
on?
Will be the 31st year. 2014
wow,
will be the
year.
31st year of this event.
Amazing, amazing. And you can read all about that on the website. Nadia, why don't you share something from your book or from your collection of writing with us?
Okay. So this one is, I guess, a small portion of the essay that I'm going to be sharing at the event. It's from Gil Robertson's
anthology, Not in My Family, AIDS in the African American Community, and my article is entitled Miss Different. Bodies collide as huge drops of hot sweat fall to the floor. Hearts are racing, thoughts are carefree, and the moment has full control. They're ready to get drunk, have fun, and forget it all. She tells herself she's earned it, that she's young, and now is the time to live spontaneously. He's in his prime. The more he gets, the more he's worth. And let's be honest, she's good enough to sample, so he does. It only takes a moment, a silent lock of the eyes, the question, the answer, yes. They don't know where they are, a vacant room, a car, a closet. It doesn't matter. All we know is that she wants him and he wants her, and in that special moment, she will. She will. What do you put in the blank? As varied as the answers will be, almost all of them will be wrong. In moments like these, when we feel it is understandable and almost right for us to lose control, we forget about the risk. The last thing we think is, in that special moment, she will be infected with AIDS. As an American woman living in the suburbs of Los Angeles, I can say that being infected with AIDS was one of the last things that I ever thought about. Even though I was born in 1984, in the height of the first epidemic, my relation to the AIDS virus was very tangential. I recognized the virus for the repulsive horror it was. I empathized with its victims. I watched the movies and campaigns. I knew both people living with and those who had succumbed to the virus, but I never truly considered the fact that it could one day attack me. How is it that when young adults like myself think of the cliches our mothers told us involving unprotected sex, a moment of passion may lead to a lifetime of pain, or death in this case, we are still more petrified of KIDS, the fruitful offspring that will sacrifice our bank accounts and vibrant social lives, instead of being deathly afraid of AIDS, the devastating virus that could sacrifice our lives? How can this still be the case, considering all of the campaigns, the plays that come to our high schools, Tyrese on BET and Bono?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. Ah. Mm. One has to pause after that. Ah, wow, Nadia. Thank you.
Well.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, what a wonderful program that you have in store for us. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be like, oh, my goodness, I certainly hope that this becomes an annual event. But the first one, certainly, everyone needs to get to, because you can say, I was there. 31 years ago, when the first writers, the literacy event happened, writers, wow, and what a wealth you have within your family itself. I mean, daughter, grandmother, and that legacy that you share with us with regards to your family members that came here from other places and those that were born here. And Raphael, within your person, you carry so much.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So do any of you all want to share any other work? We can close with some poetry.
Yes, I would love to actually share a piece from my the Moon poems, actually, that we'll be reading, if you like.
Super.
It's a prose poem, and it's entitled Moon in Space. Leafing through a book of photographs taken from space, I turn to the pictures of the moon. I, who am from the desert, have never seen images of a desert so stark, of so uniform, a gray-white. Our only relations that make up the moon are our brothers, the minerals, our sisters, the stones. But where is the iron to give a hint of a blush to those precipitous craters the copper to give a touch of blue-green to those vast and arid seas, the sulfur to give a tinge of yellow to those desolate plains, that fantasy desert, the color of ash. Even the suits of the space divers are of that same silver gray as they trudge on the virgin ground, leaving their colorless tracks. The only speck of color, the red and the blue on the little remnant of cloth they carry to stake claim for their sect to that gray territory of the moon. Turning the page, I am astonished by an image of an earthrise over the curved horizon of the moon. A great gem of turquoise and jade, lapis lazuli, pearl, carnelian, rounded and stumbling in the currents of space. The Himalayas, the Andes flattened, the continents blurred by the delicate veil of the terrestrial atmosphere. There are no borders. It is a hole, and it is very small, very fragile against the total velvet black. The sounds of the wars that rage on the earth are not heard. The cries of the wounded, of the mothers bereft, nor are the shouts, the songs of weddings and carnivals. Those are only ours. Ours is the delight and the wounding of the earth. The moon has no water for tears. Closing the book, I look up to the full moon in my window. She is more beautiful from this distance, I think, and hers is the beauty of mirrors, a beauty determined by the light they reflect. She lights the night with her desolate face and is loved because she is witness. Poor moon, there are no rainbows there. Her huge longing disturbs all that holds water on the earth. And we love her in great measure for the disquiet she causes in our blood.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I can't wait.
Oh, that was so beautiful, Raphael.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You're almost kind.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you all so much for being on the show today to share your work. And I'm really looking forward to this wonderful event that you Mrs. Mack and Anita Webb have pulled together for us. It's going to be really wonderful. Authors Off for Literacy. It should be really a wonderful event. Any closing thoughts from either you or Nadia?
Well, I just hope everyone within earshot will come. Because as a first, mm-hmm. you don't know what's going to happen. The first Jazz on the Hill I put on, I was lucky enough to clear $5. I'm hoping we clear a lot more on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Nadia?
No, I agree with what Claire said. I'm just excited to see everybody come out and have a wonderful day that's free, where there's new people you can meet, just diversity of thought. You know, it's wonderful. So if you're single, you should come out. If you're married and you have kids, you should come out. If you're young, you have nothing to do, you should come out. You should have gotten.
Mm-hmm. Right, certainly. And we want to wish you safe travels, coming here from across the country.
Thank you.
To participate in this wonderful event next week.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
On again. Oh, you're welcome, Raphael. It's always a pleasure. You all take good care.
Many,
thank
many
you so much
blessings
for joining
to
us.
You all.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you Saturday.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So I have a few announcements. There is a, there's going to be an event on Sunday, the Bay Area fundraiser for the University of Aristide Foundation, training Haiti's next generation of doctors and nurses is this Sunday, September 15th, at La Peña Cultural Center, 3105 Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley, California, from 6 to 9 p.m. Donations requested are from 5 to 15, of course. More is always welcome, and $15 for adults. So youth, 5 to 15, and 15 for adults. And featured is going to be Pierre Lavoisier, Haiti Action Committee, Walter Turner, Global Exchange, Walter Riley, National Lawyers Guild, 2013 Champion for Justice recipient, Richard Boswell, Professor of Law from UC Hastings, and Leslie Fleming of UNIFA, and Wakanda Mwetu Choir is going to be presenting the entertainment. For information, contact Eveline Hodges at 510-848-5230, or you can email linou at pacbell.net. So if you can't make the fundraiser, you can certainly still make a donation to this wonderful cause, training Haiti's next generation of doctors and nurses. So so that's one thing that's happening. And I noticed that Yerbabuena Gardens is having continuing its music series this Sunday. They're going to be presenting Lilla Downs from 1 to 2:30. And Lilla Downs is the Grammy winner, 2013 Grammy winner, and their phenomenal band bring a dramatic, unforgettable reinvention of traditional Mexican music and original compositions fused with blues, jazz, soul, African roots, and even klezmer, all supporting her soaring voice. And so Yerbabuena Gardens is located at 3rd and Mission in San Francisco in the Garden area. Yerbabuena Center for the Arts is right there as well, and across the street from the San Francisco Museum of Art, as well as the Museum of African Diaspora, which is having its family fun day. It's a free day on Sunday as well from 11 to 4. So you can actually just sort of hang out in San Francisco on Sunday and go to Yerbabuena. It's actually Yerbabuena Family Day in that area, but you can just go by the Museum of the African Diaspora. You can pop into the museum, which is also having an open day, free day, and San Francisco Museum of Modern Art on the go is going to be having exhibits and things. And then the Children's Creativity Museum is also going to be in the area. So you can visit ybfamilyday.org, ybfamilyday.org, to find out everything that's being planned for this wonderful day this Sunday in San Francisco. And so we're going to close out with and I don't want you to forget the San Francisco Fringe Festival, 22nd annual, is also continuing through next week. And if you've missed, haven't seen Movin' Melvin Brown, the man, a magic, a music, you definitely want to catch him because this is his closing weekend. He performs Sunday at 8:30 p.m. And all of the performances for San Francisco Fringe Festival are at the Exit Theater Complex, 5156 Eddy Street in San Francisco. And for information, you can call 415-673-3847, 415-673-3847. And 52 Letters is also being performed tonight, and that's looking at sexual trafficking. And one of our guests is one of our guests, Christina Regina, who's been on our show many times, this is her piece. And I don't know if she has other performances, but I know tonight is one of them, and it opened last weekend. So we certainly want to let people know about that. And so let's see, what are we going to play? We are going to play, I don't know, I think we're going to play something from Michael White, the jazz violinist. Journey of the Black Star, we're going to play that. So 52 Letters, written and performed by Regina Y. Evans, is tonight, the 13th, at 9 p.m., and on the 17th at 9 p.m., and on the 21st at 2:30 p.m., and it's a solo performance in the 60 minutes. But for a complete lineup of the 22nd Annual San Francisco Fringe Theater Festival, visit sffriends.org or call 415-673-3847. And I also want to mention a couple of other things happening this weekend. There's the 50 years later commemorating the Birmingham bombing. It's the Northeastern University School of Law, Civil Rights, and Restorative Justice Project featuring Dr. Angela Y. Davis and Professor Margaret Burnham in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Birmingham bombing. It's a $25 admission benefit for the Civil Rights and Restorative Justice Project. You can visit northeastern.edu/civil-rights. And the event is at the First Congregational Church of Oakland, 2501 Harrison Street in Oakland, again, Sunday, September 15th from 5 to 7 p.m. So it is possible, actually, to it'll be a really filled day, but you can actually catch quite a bit. Let's see, you can catch a little give away the gardens thing, and then go over to La Pena and end up at this particular event. And I also want to mention on Sunday, Afro Solo, the art exhibit, which is curated by Michael Ross, is going to have an artist talk. I believe that starts at 1 o'clock, but you can visit afrosolo.org to get the details on that. All righty. So we are going to close with another piece, and so happy that you joined us. Oh, one more thing. The Latino Film Festival also opens tonight, and it continues, I believe, for 2 weeks. And so you can go online and find that. And I might update my picks and add it to that because I just found out about it. Okay, so one more piece. And we're going to play Meglit Hadaro, who has a show, but and I don't know if we've missed it or not. I hope not. We're going to play her piece, Walls, which I happen to like a lot. So tune in for another edition of Wanda's Picks at 6 a.m. Pacific Time on Wednesday. Wednesday, September 17th. No, excuse me, 18th.
Be gentle. Be gentle, gentle with me. I feel a fragile this year. Be gentle, gentle with me, and the walls, the walls. I counted 10,000 walls around my heart now. Can't see my eye walls, my walls. Some are made of cardboard and some are made of clay. Some are made of memories for that sad, sad day. Oh, I know every single one of my walls, my walls. Oh, I walk amongst them, in between them, shout from on top of them. I walk amongst them, in between them, shout from on top of my eye. Oh, some hold bones like graveyard stones, like fossils in the sea. Well, some are painted red for mystic me. Well,